Welcome to Principal Center Radio, bringing you the best in professional practice. Here's your host, director of the Principal Center and champion of high-performance instructional leadership, Justin Bader.
Welcome, everyone, to Principal Center Radio. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and my guest today is Maya Hike-Merlin. Maya is the founder and CEO of The Together Group, where she trains educators on topics such as time management, prioritization, organization, and efficiency. A former teacher and most recently a senior executive at Achievement First, she now works full-time with schools, districts, and other organizations through The Together Group. And her first book was The Together Teacher, which we've previously discussed on Principal Center Radio. And today we're here to discuss Maya's new book, The Together Leader.
And now, our feature presentation.
Maya, welcome to Principal Center Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start by talking about what it means to be a together leader. What is that concept of togetherness that's at the heart of your books?
Too often people confuse togetherness with being just plain old organized. And what we've seen over time is togetherness really encompasses planning ahead, prioritizing, being efficient, executing well, and so on. And what I've seen is some of us have different aspects of togetherness than others. For example, you can be a great planner, but a terrible prioritizer. Great with email, terrible with paper, and so on. So I like to use the term togetherness because, number one, it has a nice emotional resonance. And two, to realize it really is all-encompassing, and it's easy to be good at parts of it and not as good at other parts.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I definitely have my strengths and weaknesses within that range of things. You know, I'm definitely not a planner. I think I'm much more of a prioritizer, and I'm good at certain aspects of organization. I think I'm on a 492-day streak on getting to inbox zero with my email. And as I was reviewing the book, I know you cover a lot of ground. There are a lot of different aspects in which we can kind of get ourselves together as leaders and make it all work. When you work with a principal, let's say you're working with a school leader who's in a fairly demanding environment, what do you see as some of the first key priorities to help them get organized? What are some of the top issues that you like to address first when you're working with a principal?
So I was thinking about this because I was recently working with somebody who was, not what I would call in the hot mess hunter-gatherer phase of togetherness. This person was reasonably together, but I like to break things up into three big sections. What I see that people need, first of all, is usually really strong systems for self. So a lot of the basics that you and I know, a short-term to-do list, a long-term to-do list, a calendar that reflects their priorities and so on. And then the second bucket that we often move into is systems for team. And people forget that these matter equally as much. For example, what are your communication agreements? When do you text versus email versus call? Another example would be, are roles and responsibilities really clear, not only to you, but to the teachers at our school, to the families you work with? And after we get together self and then together team, we look at sort of together school, or what I would call together organization, and make sure everything from, so how do you codify knowledge? How do you make sure you're communicating with your staff in a systematic way? And so the mistake I see people make a lot is to try to do all of that at once. And while it may feel like it makes more sense to start at the together school level, what I typically see is the job, as you mentioned, is so demanding on a daily basis that the greatest success can often be found at first with systems for self, and then we layer on the other things over time.
Yeah, Peter Senge calls personal mastery the fifth discipline, but really it's often the first. If we're going to get the house in order, it's got to start with us. I love that. I remember reading a book on how to clean your room that I'm sure my mom bought me when I was about 7. And one of the first things was make your bed, make your bed first. And then you have a foundation for getting started. But in the book, you talk not about starting with a specific organizational strategy, but starting more big picture, starting with mission. And I wonder if you could draw some lines for us to connect mission with some of those more day-to-day productivity decisions and systems that we need to deal with.
So I work exclusively with people who work in what I would call a mission-driven context, where some sort of social good is the bottom line, primarily in education, but, churches or hospitals or whatever that might be as well. And I think this set of challenges is particularly unique with this group. So, for example, most people I know in these roles are both managers and makers. So they're not just sitting in a world directing everything. They're literally in there doing some of the work. Two, most of them have a really wide variety of constituents that require various types of communication. There's not a one-size-fits-all, let me send this, you know, whole memo out to my teachers, to my two families, et cetera. There's a lot of differentiated communication and constituents. Three, most of my mission-driven leaders are working in an environment that might be less predictable or more prone to interruptions for often really emotional reasons. Like, I was coaching a principal recently, and she had just finished breaking up, you know, a fight between middle school students, which, you know, is not ideal and not typical, but it had happened. And that does take a toll. So I think in a mission-driven world, prioritization can feel a lot more personal and, frankly, a lot more challenging because you're just so aware of what is at stake. And I can think back to my first year of teaching where I couldn't get good at all subjects all at once as a self-contained elementary teacher. And I had to say reading has to come first. And I was well aware that science was, you know, getting the short end of the stick. And that just felt painful. And I think it's a different kind of personal pain because so many people that I work with are deeply committed to their mission.
Right. And I don't know if you see this, but I feel like in our profession, often we feel like the solution is just to run faster, that the demands are so high and the solution is bring more to the table, work longer hours, work harder, work faster, care more. And I appreciate the way that you take kind of a high level view and kind of a long term view of, you know, looking at that big picture plan, that big picture mission, and really structuring it, breaking it down, planning it out. What are some of the key planning tools or planning steps that you recommend that leaders go through kind of early on in the process?
Yes, I think there's three big ones that stand out to me, and they're the first chapters in the book, deliberately. The first is making sure you have a really clear sense of what your priorities are, using what I would call a priority plan, a three-month tool that breaks down the how of your work for not forever, because that's sometimes overwhelming to people to write a year-long plan, for example. But, okay, for the next 3 months, the following things matter the most, and here's my high-level path to get there. Because I often see people have their goals pretty clear, to what they want to accomplish, and then they've got their calendars, and they're running their day, and they know the when, but they haven't really stopped to map out the how. So that's one, get your priority plan in place. Two, align your calendar right around your priority plan. I go into school leaders' calendars all the time, and I'm like, what's this meeting? Why is it 90 minutes? And what I see, because everybody wants a piece of that leader, is if you don't happen to your calendar will happen to you. And the only way to happen to your calendar is to go in and block off those things in advance to make sure that you can actually, you know, accomplish them over time. And then the third thing I have seen leaders do to follow up on those two tools is to pause and do one of two things. Either really create what's an ideal week in your life look like, both personal and professional. I was working with a leader recently who wanted a little more time with her son, and she realized she had the time in the evening, but it was getting interrupted by her phone a lot, right? So this was her problem. And we promptly removed email from her phone, and she has said literally game-changing, life-altering, because I was just half distracted but not moving any important work ahead. Why was I doing that?
Well, she died immediately, didn't she? When you took email off of her phone, didn't she just drop dead on the spot?
She thought she might. I mean, she literally took a deep breath when I did it. We were live and in person together. I was like, I'm just going to push this button. I want you to know it's not coming. You know, she could easily put it back if she felt like it. But, you know, a few weeks later, she's still going strong. And if you didn't want to create an ideal week, the other thing you could do is to actually track your time. So author Laura Vanderkam, who writes about productivity from sort of a different standpoint, is a huge fan of this. Because what you'll often see is where you think you spend your time, it is not being spent.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm reminded of Parkinson's law, that work expands to fill the available time. So if we don't start with that degree of purpose, with those priorities and actually putting them on the calendar, then they simply don't get done. And one exercise that I recently have been kind of bullying people into doing live while they're in the room with me is, when, you know, if you want to get into classrooms 3 times a day, actually schedule on your calendar 8 times when you could get into classrooms. And people say, 8? boy, that sounds like a lot. And I say, well, you're going to get interrupted, right? You're not going to make it to all eight. So if you schedule eight, you can make it to three. The fire drill can disrupt one of them, and a fight can disrupt another one, and you'll still be on track. And people sit there and kind of see if I'm going to move on or if they actually have to stop and do the exercise. And we wait until people actually do the exercise, find on their calendars. And miraculously, what they find is they have the time if they set it up, if they set it aside. So I appreciate what you've said about priorities and about that level of intentionality. One thing that is often a barrier for people is those mandatory meetings that you mentioned, that it feels like it's required to have the principal or at least some administrator at virtually all these meetings. And if you're the figurehead of the organization, you know, symbolically, it says a lot if you're there. What do you recommend that leaders who feel like they're pulled into too many meetings that they really don't need to be in do delicately to, you know, liberate themselves from some of that time or some of those meetings?
Good question. I actually get that one a ton. And I think first and foremost is ask to see an agenda. And I mean, too often you go and I will see school leaders show up at a 60-minute meeting and people are talking about things that could have been sort of pre-work or discussed. So just setting that expectation up front, do we have an agenda? Two is training your team to not just come to you with open-ended questions. So I was just working with the CEO of a large school district yesterday and we were practicing how to train his team to ask him multiple choice questions. Your options are A, B, C, or D. So then they can debate the merits of those solutions as opposed to generating them in the meeting. And then, you know, if all else fails and you have to be at that meeting for ceremonious or figurehead reasons, I do recommend having a secret list of strategic multitasking items that you can brainstorm on a legal pad. For example, maybe you have been hesitating thinking about your team retreat because it just sounds overwhelming or you have no time to go to a mountaintop. Well, if you have 10 minutes in a meeting where everybody else is taking notes and your participation is not fully required, maybe you could jot out five bullets that would help you get started on that team retreat agenda later.
I love that. And I think the on paper type of thinking and planning is something that a lot of us got away from when we got laptops, when we got iPads and different devices. But we know the difference, you know, symbolically, if somebody's clacking away on their keyboard when, you know, maybe there's not an appropriate note to take, they know we're not paying attention. But on paper, we don't have that same problem and we can do some great thinking. I love that. Well, Maya, one thing I wanted to ask about in terms of planning, I'm not naturally a big planner. And I think the job of the principalship tends to make us cynical about planning because we make these great plans for how we're going to spend our time. And then life happens, emergencies happen, the fire department shows up, the superintendent shows up, and we have to change those plans. And sometimes it feels like, you know, we'd have less frustration in the day if we didn't plan things out so thoroughly. So I wonder what your thoughts are on developing that kind of long-term plan, immediate-term plan, calendar for the week. What's the right level of structure that creates the framework in which we can actually get meaningful work done, but doesn't produce that sense of frustration that, okay, I'm constantly making plans and then I'm having to remake them because things change? Is there a sweet spot that you found?
I love that you are asking this question. So my firm belief is the more planned you are, the more flexible you actually can be. That sounds counterintuitive to a lot of people. But what I see, and I get to shadow great leaders for a living, is the more white space you have in your calendar, the more likely you are to make something that is not an emergency, whether it's because you're good at it, you like doing it more. And one of the exercises I've been doing with leaders is having them track their emergencies, real and perceived, you know, for the course of 2 weeks. And what we typically find is, you know, 50% of them could have been prevented, you know, 30%, you might have to reset expectations. But I would err on the side of making your schedule tighter than maybe your inclination, because all I really want people to do is stop before they spin. And for example, I was coaching three different leaders recently, and over the course of the week, the following three things happened. One, a major plumbing emergency, like a crisis flooding in a school building. Two, a quick being pulled aside by somebody, a high performer on your team who is crying and upset about something. And three, at the school district level, there's a bomb threat. So I was watching all of these people with all of these emergencies. Really, only the bomb threat warranted the spin. The plumbing emergency could have been delegated. The person had staff to do it. The crying high performer, absolutely, you want to take a little bit of time for that person, but that also can get, you know, deferred until later, if that makes sense. You know, that one, you really have choice. But what I found is when people have a lot of white space in their calendar, they don't pause before they spin. They're not weighing it against anything else. So of course you would spin. Why not? And so the more you have filled in, the more I would just say, then you can stop, assess what it is. Is it really an emergency or not? And then decide to spin. And just because you make a detailed schedule doesn't mean it has to live out. Like sometimes people perceive themselves as a failure because they didn't get through their calendar the way they wanted or didn't complete their to-do list. And I will say things like, you are missing the point entirely. This isn't about getting everything done. It's about making the choice to do the right thing at the right time. That's a very different sort of question to ask.
I think back to David Allen's advice in his book, Getting Things Done, which I know is a productivity classic. Millions of people read it. It was very influential on me. And he basically says to do the opposite of what you're saying and just kind of be flexible. And what I have found the hard way to be true is that Maya wins that argument. I think you are overwhelmingly right that it's the plan that creates the flexibility, that if we do have white space on the calendar, anything can become an emergency. And I've actually asked that question in the last couple of months at workshops. I'll say, okay, of the things that are keeping you from getting into classrooms more, you know, these emergencies that pop up, which ones are really emergencies? And someone recently said, well, if there's blood, it's an emergency. And my thought was, well, yeah, to somebody, but you know, I personally have minimal training in first aid, zero training in, you know, any actual medical practice. So we've really got to define very sharply both. I love what you said about, you know, setting expectations with your staff for what's an emergency, what's a get Justin out of the classroom, what's a get Maya out of the classroom and, you know, ring the bells kind of emergency, because, yeah, things will rise to that level if they're not competing with anything. I love that framing that you had of, you know, you can't prioritize one thing against nothing. You can only prioritize multiple options against each other.
Right. And the right answer sometimes is to spend, but you have to weigh it against it. And one of the most interesting exercises I saw a principal do recently in Philadelphia is really norming with her team on what is an emergency. And she had some language I loved. She called it butterfly, squirrel, or shark attack. And she had said she was getting shark attacked by a lot of her teachers who were making things that she didn't feel like an emergency. And they were pulling her out of classrooms and, you know, all the things you alluded to. But she realized she had never paused and said, what is our school definition of an emergency together as a group? And so they created the shared language. Is it a butterfly bite? Is it a squirrel attack? Is it a shark attack? So that they could actually norm together. Incidentally, that strategy works well with your own children at home. Most of your listeners who have children at your home, it works on my kindergartner. I told her she had 16 shark attacks this morning about butterfly situations. But do you think, like, taking that time to really say, at our school this year, what is an emergency? And that definition may change. If a school is working hard on parent relationships and family culture stuff, then maybe a lot more parent interruptions do warrant that level. But that may shift the following year. And so being open to your definition of emergency, adjusting over time.
Well, that raises the question for me, Maya, of what we put off and how we deal with it later. And you talk in the book about this idea of strategic procrastination and intentionally not doing now things that do not need to be done now, even if they may, in fact, need to be done later. Could you talk to us more about what strategic procrastination looks like?
Yes. Most leaders' lists that I look at are generally too long. And that's fine because, you know, mission-driven leaders always want to get more done in a day. They can see and feel their impact, so they want to move things ahead. But more often than not all of it needs to be done right now. And what I will frequently say is give yourself the gift of two to-do lists, one for now and one for later. And the later ones, I will typically say, organize it by when your brain is ready to think about it. And we all know let's say you have a huge presentation coming up in May. If you tried to think about it in January, for most of us out there, it's pretty hard. There's usually a point in time when your brain is ready to start thinking about it. So if you go back to that I Love Lucy example with the chocolates and the chocolate factories, you know that episode and they're coming down the conveyor belt and they're really fast. I picture your later list as a tool that's allowing you to strategically procrastinate by tossing things further out until you need to think about them. And if you're really culling your later list a lot, what happened to me recently before spring break is I had accumulated a lot of things on mine and I walked through it and about 50 to-dos to die. And so I think it gives you the discipline to decide, is it really worth doing? Is it aligned to my priorities? Could I delegate it? Just because you write it down does not mean you are locked into doing it. And so if leaders can give themselves, you know, a short list for now and a longer list for later, I think it can actually help the work stay more manageable.
I think when we see something that's been on the list for a while or it's been on the desk for a while, and we can, you know, kind of kick the can down the road, kick the decision down the road, maybe with a tickler file or snoozing an email with, you know, a boomerang or something like that, we get the chance to make a decision when we're in a different frame of mind and we have a different perspective and we have more information than maybe we had before. And I think that does give us a chance to let things drop if they don't rise to the level of priorities. Because back to your idea of white space, if anything is on the list, we think it has to get done. And what I've realized with my electronic to-do list in particular is it's mostly a record of things that I could be doing, but that I'm probably not going to do. And it sounds like a weird way to use a to-do list. And I took this advice from my friend Kevin Kruse, who has a book called 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management, something like that. And he says, you know, if you have a real to-do, something you really need to get done, don't put it on your to-do list. Put it on your calendar.
Yeah, I say the same thing. Lists are limitless, but calendars force constraint. The interesting thing about what you're saying with that, though, is everybody's threshold for what requires something to be booted to their calendar is different. So when I work with, you know, very busy senior school district official, for example, who schedules wall-to-wall meetings, anything more than 10 to 15 minutes might have to get on that person's calendar. Whereas if I work with somebody who's in a different kind of role, maybe fewer meetings, maybe the threshold is an hour, 2 hours to boot something onto the calendar. So what I frequently will say to people is, what is your threshold that requires something to land on your calendar? Because some people hate everything on their calendar, Justin. You know, you've probably met people like this over time. And what I'll see in my workshops is people divide into who are the wetters versus the winners. And so that's the calendar versus the to-do list. And while I also personally believe the calendar should mostly win, for some people that just doesn't work for them. And so what we need to do is then make sure their to-do list have some sort of sense of time incorporated into them. So I'm pretty flexible. You want to lead with your list, fine. You want to lead with your calendar, fine. But both wetters and winners each need a dose of each other.
Well, I wonder if we could conclude by thinking a little bit about habits. And I know there's plenty more in the book. It's a more than 400-page book, and we could talk for hours. But we know that a lot of our consistency and a lot of our, ultimately, our performance over time comes from not what we choose to do moment by moment, but from the habits that we put into place, the routines that we give ourselves, the kind of milestones that we make sure that we hit every week. In working with school leaders from a variety of different contexts, what are some of the key habits that you've seen working well for leaders?
So the first habit I've seen is getting in the mindset of clean as you go. So, you know, there's two ways to cook in a kitchen. You can make a huge mess and clean it all up on the back end, which requires more time. Or you can make small moves throughout the entire cooking process, which leaves you with no cleanup. And I don't want to squash anybody's sort of spontaneous cooking habits, but if we take this back to the leader context, I will see a lot of school leaders very conscientiously take notes all day into a notebook or some digital tool and then say, I'll go back and put my deadlines where they go later and put these thoughts for a team member later. And they just don't have time to process. So the more you can do in the moment to get it where it goes the first time, I think the better off you have. But it's really hard. I mean, it takes a moment to say, okay, I have to get this where it goes right now. what can I do? But you'll save yourself so much back-end processing. The second habit that I've seen be really helpful for people is some sort of opening and closing routine. So many people know about like a good weekly planning routine. If you've read David Allen's stuff, I have a slightly different take discussed in the book, but everybody needs some kind of weekly planning routine. But also the way you open the day and the way you close the day can be hugely helpful. And whether that's a mini checklist, do I have my keys? Am I prepared for meetings? I know one school leader who had to pause for like 5 minutes to mentally get his head together before he, you know, walked home for his family. And I think the third one is automate whatever you can. So if you know there's a science fair at your school every year, is there some sort of standing checklist? Here's what we do 6 weeks before. Here's what we do 4 weeks before, or the same for field trips. And this is the mindset, like, let's not let the predictable be an emergency. And we're in Teacher Appreciation Week right at this moment. And literally three schools that I am working with, it became an emergency. I'm like, wait, this is a known event scheduled a year in advance. Like, this should not be an emergency. What are your systems and processes in place, and who's the owner, such that we can have a joyous Teacher Appreciation Week and clear our heads for the real emergencies we'll inevitably face.
Love it. And that's togetherness.
That is togetherness.
Well, Maya, if people want to find more about your work online, where can they go to get more information?
So they could head to www.thetogethergroup.com. Everything on the website, 100% free, no ads, no affiliate links, no nothing, and can read all about what different leaders do in different contexts to stay together in serving ultimately toward results. I mean, nobody wants to get organized for organization's sake, but really helping their organizations achieve better success and hopefully with a little more sanity or sustainability along the way.
So the book is The Together Leader, Get Organized for Your Success and Sanity, A Guide for Education Leaders. Maya, thanks so much for joining me on Principal Center Radio.
Thank you for having me.
And now, Justin Bader on High Performance Instructional Leadership.
So High Performance Instructional Leaders, what did you take away from my conversation with Maya about The Together Leader? Obviously, we had a lot to talk about in terms of productivity, but I really appreciated the sense of planning that Maya brought. As I said, my natural inclination is to be kind of in the moment and to have lots of ideas, but not to kind of schedule them out. But one of my big learnings, one of my big discoveries about productivity in recent months has been the importance of a plan and a calendar. So there is a sweet spot for each individual. You might have preferences in one direction or the other, and just depending on how many meetings you go to. If you're a superintendent, you might have a highly structured day, or if you are an elementary principal, you might find much more discretion over your time throughout the day. But regardless, I want to encourage you to be purposeful in planning how you're going to spend your time. Don't let the day happen to you. And one of the tools that's really helped me to be more purposeful with how I allocate my time to different projects, to different things that I have to get done, is to really get current on email and paperwork. And if I could recommend one tool that everyone start with, I referenced the Tickler file in my conversation with Maya. I call it the Future file, and it's simply a set of 43 folders that I can use to postpone any hard copy document that I have on my desk. I can put it in a folder. I can put it in the 17 folder if I want to see it on the 17th of the month. I can put it in the July folder if I don't want to see it till July. And every day or at the first of every month, I open up the appropriate folder and there are all the documents that I will need. So that is a very easy system to set up. You can get a free guide on how to do that and a set of labels that you can print at principalcenter.com/future. And again, I do want to encourage you to check out Maya's book, The Together Leader. It is loaded with strategies and tools and case studies that will help you get yourself organized, get your school organized, set the right expectations, and get things together so that you can deliver results for students.
Thanks for listening to Principal Center Radio. For more great episodes, subscribe on our website at principalcenter.com/radio.